In 1992, Colin Falconer published a book called A Beginner's Guide to Fatherhood. And in it, he put a test for future parents, which comprises of 14 different categories. And he said if you can successfully accomplish these 14 different things, you would be ready to become a parent. So I thought I would share just a few of these important steps. One of them was going to the grocery store. So he says, go to your local supermarket and take with you the nearest thing you can find to a preschool child. His suggestion is a fully grown goat. If you intend to have more than one child, take more than one goat. Buy your weekly groceries without letting the goat out of your sight. Pay for everything the goat eats or destroys. Until you can easily accomplish this, do not even contemplate having children. Having a two-year-old, this is very true. To prepare you for how nights will feel, in honor of Sean and Katie, walk around the living room from 5 to 10 p.m. carrying a wet bag weighing approximately 8 to 10 pounds with a radio turned to static or some other obnoxious sound playing loudly. At 10 p.m., put the bag down, set the alarm for midnight, and go to sleep. Get up at 11 p.m. and walk the bag around the living room until 1 a.m. Set the alarm for 3 a.m. As you can't get back to sleep, get up at 2 a.m. and make a cup of tea. Go to bed at 2:45 a.m. Get up again at 3 a.m. when the alarm goes off. Sing songs in the dark until 4 a.m. Put the alarm on for 5 a.m. Get up when it goes off. Make breakfast. Keep this up for 5 years and look cheerful. Conversations with children. Just one step here. Repeat everything you say 5 times. And then the final one I'll share is on knowledge. Find a couple who are already parents and berate them about their methods of discipline, lack of patience, appallingly low tolerance levels, and how they've allowed their children to run wild. Suggest ways in which they might improve their child's sleeping habits, toilet training, table manners, and overall behavior. Enjoy it. It will be the last time in your life that you will have all the answers. Parenting is very difficult. And this morning we're going to be talking about parenting, and I recognize that probably more than half of us here are not parents. But I hope that as we talk about parenting that there will be lessons and things that we can all learn, even for those of us who might not be parents today. At a minimum, it might help you understand your parents a little bit better. And so parenting, you know, is very difficult. Both parents come with their personalities and their traits, their values, their family backgrounds, and they bring those to the equation. And often they are very different from one another. Then each child is very unique with their own personalities and traits. And there are so many options out there for how to raise your kids. You have to decide about sleeping and will you let them cry it out, or are you going to let them sleep in the bed with you? What are you going to allow them to eat? What about screen time? What activities and hobbies are you going to want them to have? What school are you going to send them to? So many different options. And the challenge is that to this day, no formula has been created that, if you use it, will guarantee that your kids will turn out great. There's no formula. And this is because we all have our own freedom of choice. We all are different people with our own personalities. For example, how many of you are very different from your siblings? How many of you are very different from your siblings, right? Pretty much all of us. Anybody that has a sibling, you're different from your sibling in some major and key ways. But how can that be? You have the same parents, the same background, the same upbringing, the same home, the same beliefs, the same value system. All these things are the same. Yet somehow, two kids growing up in that exact same environment can turn out to be very different people. And so part of the challenge of parenting is wondering whether or not we're doing a good job. There's no objective standard. There's nothing that we can clearly say, okay, do this, that, and the other. If I do this, then everything's going to turn out great. And so we often wonder, am I doing a good job? Am I a good parent? And unfortunately, that in our insecurity and in our doubts, I believe that oftentimes we end up turning on one another. Parenting has become sort of a competition and a judgment. judgment abounds, that we dig into the ideas and the philosophies that we embrace, and every other philosophy, there's no way that that can be okay, and we sort of reject those, and we demean them, we say, those are awful, how could you do those things to your kids? But it really comes out of our own insecurities and wondering, am I doing a good job? In fact, in a survey done in 2015 of over 2,000 parents, they found that 90% of mothers and 85% of fathers said they felt judged by others based on the parenting decisions they've made. 90% and 85%. And in fact, 50%, nearly 50%, said they felt that way all the time or most of the time, feeling like they were being judged by others on the parenting decisions that they had made. So, how can we navigate this parenting thing, this challenging task that has been set before us, but this joyful task that has been set before us? Let's turn to our text for this morning, Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6, and see what Proverbs has to tell us about raising our kids. The verse is a well-known one. It says, "Start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it." Now, this probably sounds funny to you, right? Because we're used to the good old King James Version. The good old King James Version is, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." That's more what we remember. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. So I found it immediately interesting that the NIV chose this word, "start off a child in the way he should go," instead of the train, which I so often had heard. And so pulled up my Bible software and looked at some commentaries and sort of read around and found that what's sort of interesting is that this is the only place in the Old Testament where this word is used in the context of parenting. In other places, the word more means dedicate. And so this word was used for the dedication of a house. It was used for the dedication of an altar. It was used at the dedication of the walls of Jerusalem. And most importantly, at the dedication of Solomon's temple. And so the idea here is that of dedication and dedicating something from the beginning of its use, or in this case, with kids, at the beginning of their lives. And so what Proverbs is telling us is that our job, our task, is that from the very beginning of life, from the get-go, from the start, we are to dedicate our children to God. That we are to train them, to show them who God is and how their life can be used to serve God. And I can imagine that the first people who heard this advice, heard these wise words, would immediately think about the Shema prayer in Deuteronomy 6, 4-9. This was a prayer that they prayed every day and was the first prayer that was taught to all their children. And this prayer says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts. Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates." So children taught two important things from birth. First, that there is only one true God who is one. And then secondly, we are to love God with everything in our being. But I believe that we should also add what Jesus says in Matthew 22, 36-40. When he says, when he's asked the question, "Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" And he replies, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." And so from birth, the most important thing we need to teach our children, the thing we dedicate them towards, is embracing loving the one true God and loving other people. The rest is just details. This is the core. So get your kids to sleep however you want to get them to sleep. Feed them what you want to feed them. Make sure they get an education. Do what you're going to do. But the non-negotiable, the core thing we are called to do is to teach our kids to love the one true God and love other people. The Deuteronomy text says, talk about this at all times, impress it on their hearts, write it down, put visual symbols in key places. make constant reminders of this call to love. And so as we teach our kids about life, and not just teach our kids, when someone comes up and they ask you, what do you believe, or why do you do this particular thing? Well, why do you do this? Why do you do that? Whenever they ask you that question, it should all come back to loving God and loving other people. So until you can answer the question of why you keep the Sabbath, or why you believe in the second coming, or why you deal with money the way you do, or why you do the hobbies you do, or what health decisions you've made, until you can explain it in the light of how it helps you love God and love other people, don't give an answer. Because that answer is just going to be the clanging cymbal, the noisy gong. When you can explain it in the light and in the context of God's love, then it's beautiful and meaningful and comes to life and something we all want to embrace. And so with your kids, when you're trying to teach them what you believe and your core values and how you live your lives as a family, it should all come back to how we love God and love other people. That is at the core of everything. So the Proverbs text tells us to dedicate our kids from the beginning to loving the one true God and loving others. And that's sort of the bigger picture calling that we have. But what about the unique role each of us has to play? Does the text give more instruction for us? The passage says to start children off on the way they should go. It was interesting as I read several different commentaries, a bit of debate about what this actually means on the way they should go. Several commentaries, including the Adventist Bible Study commentary, suggest that we need to take into account our child's personality and temperament and encourage them to go down their own path, to find the unique way God has called them to live out his love. That we can't force our own way on them, but that we need to help our children find their own way. There were other commentaries who disputed that notion and said, look, Proverbs is dealing with the bigger picture here. It's just laying out two paths, that there's a way of the righteous and there's a way of the wicked, but don't get too caught up in this unique way and all that. That's not what the text is trying to get at. So where do I stand? I agree with the second point of view in the sense that there is a bigger picture. This call to love God and love others is the most important thing, and Proverbs is certainly speaking to that. But I find that first point of view compelling and important as well, because it absolutely is important to encourage our children to find the unique way God is calling them to display love in this world. Our job is not to force kids down certain paths, but to encourage them and help them find the unique calling that God has given them. Our diversity is beautiful and needs to be embraced and makes our world more complete. Now, I'm going to talk about a few things that might make us uncomfortable. And in fact, I might say a few things you disagree with, and that's fine. But I want to talk a little bit about what I believe is some of the biggest mistakes that parents make. Some of the biggest mistakes that we make as parents is using our kids to, one, try and fix our past mistakes or regrets. Trying to use our kids to fix past mistakes or regrets. Things you wish you would have done, a career you wish you would have chosen, you try and force your kid down that path. Or secondly, trying to use our kids as a means to impress other people, including God. How does this display itself? Sometimes we have forced kids into careers they don't want to go down. They've been forced to marry people they don't want to marry. And we try and force them to believe things they don't want to believe. Instead of allowing and encouraging your kids to find their own path, you're forcing your own ways upon them. Now, I won't ask you to raise your hands, but I wonder how many of us here today chose our career that we really don't enjoy because of pressure from our parents. This happens probably most with the medical professions, right? Every parent wants their kid to be a doctor or in medicine in some way. We're right down the street from Loma Linda University. I wonder what percentage of students at Loma Linda University would drop out today if they knew their parents would support them in doing it. I think it'd be at least 10%, if not 25. How many of you came to church today, or in the past, have come to church just so you wouldn't hear your parents berating you for not going to church? How many of you are keeping your own personal beliefs and values secret because you don't want to have that awkward conversation with your parents? It is vitally important that we allow our kids to find their own way. You will always be the parent. And when our kids are young, it's important to train them and to discipline them, and you're in control. But as they get older, the task is to give more and more freedom and allow them to choose their own path. And that's a scary thing. And I'm glad I'm not there yet. I've got 6 and 2, so I've got full control still, kind of. But I'm scared. When do you start loosening the strings? How do you handle those issues? And I think part of our fear actually deals with the end of this verse. The proverb seems so straightforward, right? It says, start children off on the way they should go, and even when they are old, they will not turn from it. It seems easy, right? But the problem is that many kids who have started on the right path have turned from it. Some of your kids have turned from the path you sent them down. Maybe your parents think you've turned from the path they wanted you to go down. And for the parents who have kids who have strayed from the path, this passage haunts them. The guilt is overwhelming. Their belief is that they must have done something wrong. How did I mess up? When did I go wrong? What did I do? And to this, I say, yes, you absolutely messed up. But so did every other parent, including the parents that have the perfect children that you wish you had. We have all made mistakes. We all have regrets. Sure, some of us have made poorer choices than others. But the reality is that while Proverbs does provide wisdom that is generally true, there are always exceptions to the rule. There are exceptions because we're individuals with freedom of choice. You could do everything right, everything by the book, and your kid might still choose a different path. And so one of the things that often happens when our kids choose a different path is that as parents, we feel insecure and guilty, and we want our children to desperately change. And in this desperation to change, we often harass them to change. Sometimes a parent even chooses to cut off all communication with their children because of the choices they have made. May I suggest that if your child has chosen a different path than the one you would prefer, that more than ever, you focus on loving them unconditionally and reminding them of God's unconditional love. Stop harassing them about going to church every week. Just model the joy and beauty of faith for them. Please stay in communication with them too. I know of cases where families have left the church and their parents have disowned them and have had no communication with them or their grandchildren simply because they decided they were no longer Adventist. We see this the most with children who come out as lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender. They often are cut off from their families. If you think that is somehow going to change them, I have never heard of an example of that working. It just leads to more pain and anger, and suicide rates skyrocket when they are completely cut off from their family. These are your children. They're your children. Don't cut them off. It's interesting. In Ephesians 6:4, there's some excellent advice. It says, fathers, do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord. Isn't that interesting? That's the advice. Don't exasperate your children. Basically, what this means is don't make your children angry. That's what he's saying. Don't, you know, parents, don't make your children angry. Now, I think there are two things that make kids angry more than anything else. First is parents who harass them and force them to do things they don't want to do. None of us likes to be forced to do things we don't want to do. And secondly, parents who reject them and shun them because of the choices they have made. Our focus must be on our kids embracing the God who loves them unconditionally. And how will they ever come to know that and experience that if all they've known is parents who have rejected them and not loved them unconditionally? A quick sidebar. I'd also like to suggest that perhaps we could learn from our kids who have chosen different paths. Sometimes it might look on the surface like they've rejected the path you have laid out for them, but they might just be expressing your values and beliefs in a new and different way. And so take time to talk to your kids, to listen to your kids, to understand why they've made the choices they've made. And oftentimes you will see that it's actually just them living out those principles in a little different way. And so parenting is hard enough on its own, right? But we're making it harder on ourselves with all this anxiety, this guilt, this fear. Am I a good parent? Have I failed my kids? We're judging each other. We're critiquing each other. So what might be a path forward? I'm going to make up something. We're talking about life hacks and using hashtags and all that kind of stuff. So I'm going to make up something. And I'm going to call it Sabbath parenting. Sabbath parenting. We need to embrace the Sabbath concept and how we raise kids. The Sabbath teaches us a few important things, among many others. This is just a short list. But the Sabbath teaches us that God loves us just as we are, that our worth is not determined by what we accomplish, that God loves us just as we are, even when we're not accomplishing things. He says, take a break, stop, don't work. I love you as you are. Secondly, the Sabbath teaches us that sometimes we need to rest and sometimes stop working and just embrace that we've done what we can do. And third, the Sabbath helps us understand that the world doesn't revolve around us and that we need to trust that God is at work in the world and that everything won't fall apart without me. And so how might this relate to parenting? First, our worth is not tied to what our kids have done. If your kids turned out great, stay humble. You are fortunate, but no better than the person whose child is in jail. Parents who have kids who have done awful things, your worth is not tied to that. Your children chose their own path. God's love and grace is sufficient for you. Let's stop judging each other and the choices we make, and instead encourage each other. Let us embrace God's love in our own lives so that we can love others. Secondly, Sabbath parenting means that we embrace that we tried. We did our best. We can stop obsessing about what we've done or not done. We made mistakes. We all have. We tried, and we need to acknowledge our limits. Sometimes I've had to have Curious George babysit for a couple hours. Sometimes I've fed my kids junk food just to get them to be quiet. That's okay. But maybe some of us have done even more damaging things to our kids, and we realize that. There is grace for you too. Perhaps some of us need to forgive our parents for what they have done to us. We realize that they had their own issues that they were working with, their own demons that they were wrestling with, and it resulted in some unfortunate behavior towards you. But you want to be free from that. God can help you be free and begin that process of forgiveness. Sabbath parenting finally also means that we can give our kids some freedom, that we can let them be themselves, that we can trust that God is working in their lives, that we don't have to harass them day and night, that we can just model love and grace and know that God is at work. And remember that on the surface, it might look like maybe they're acting very different than what you wanted, but it doesn't mean they've completely rejected the path you laid out for them. It might just be a little bit different the way they're reflecting your values. The most beloved story, probably the most beloved parable, is the parable of the prodigal son. And as I was reflecting on parenting this last week, the prodigal son's story came to my mind, and I looked at it from the perspective of the father. Think about it. Here's the son who asks his father for his inheritance early, basically saying, I want you dead. And what does the father do? He gives it to him. Think about the shame he experienced. Think about all the parents, other parents who told him he made a terrible decision. Why would you do that? But he does it. And what does the son do? Absolutely. Goes off, crazy living, bringing shame on the father and his family. But then the son gets into really tough times, and he knows, I've got to go back home. And as he's coming home, the story tells us that the father sees him from far off, as if it's telling us that every day the father would go outside looking and waiting to see if his son would go home, come home. And as he sees him far off, he races to him and he hugs him, tells him he loves him. I mean, he's just so thrilled. Before the son even says he's sorry or says anything, the father lavishes his love on him. The son says he's sorry. The father says, we've got to have a party. Do everything. Throw the best party ever because my son has come home. This parable teaches us about God's great love for us, that even when we go astray, God's love remains and wants us to embrace his love. This same love is the love we as parents are called to show, and not just parents, but as coworkers, as neighbors, as friends. This unconditional love is what draws people to God. Sometimes our kids will do things to embarrass us, to bring maybe shame or guilt to us, but the call is to love them through it all, because love is the only way forward. And so the call for us this morning is more than ever to focus on God's love. As parents, this is the most important thing we can teach our kids. As coworkers, friends, neighbors, loving others unconditionally is the most powerful way they can ever know about the God who loves them. Let us embrace Sabbath parenting and end with all the judgment and the criticism and the critique, and embrace God's love. Embrace we've tried, we've done our best, and leave the rest to God. And my special appeal to the parents who have kids who've turned from the way: God's grace and love is sufficient for you. Don't be ashamed of your kids. Be proud of them. They might have done some really awful stuff, but be proud of them. Love them. Embrace them. Tell them how much you love them, how much God loves them, how much you care for them. For that is the only way they will ever come back to the path you want them to be on. You don't have to live in the shadows and in the darkness. I hear it so many times over and over again when I talk to parents and their kids. Oh, what do your kids do? And a lot of times there's a kid who, you know, didn't do everything they wanted. And they sort of hem and haw, sort of apologize. That, well, you know, love your kids. Be proud of them. Embrace them. They're your kids. They need your love. They need your support. They need your care. Let us love one another. Let us care for one another and trust one another to God's care. As we close this morning, let's join in singing the reminder of how deep the Father's love is for us.